glories of the Holy Name, our imagination, and interpreting the Holy Name. And after merging those together, then he puts in another one in attention as to make 10 instead of 11 for us. This is called Arta-Vad, to interpret the name or to think of the glories of the Holy Name as imagination. Arta, of course, means meaning. Vada means to speak about. So we speak about the meaning of the Holy Name. Instead of giving the real meaning, we give some other meaning. So we speculate about the glory of the Holy Name and its meaning. Instead of taking the name as absolute and non from Krishna. So this involves, of course, a lack of faith in and misunderstanding of who is God and who is Vishnu or Krishna, and also of the absolute value of the name, and also of the power of devotional service. All these things are lacking if we have Arta-Vad or interpreting the Holy Name. So the Holy Name is glorified in the scriptures, and it is called the supreme method by which you can attain all of your material goals and your spiritual goals. And it is considered the best way to get the mercy of the Lord. It is considered the best way of getting knowledge or jnana. It is the best type of austerity, the best type of vrata or vow, and it will give the best results. It's the best form of yoga. It's the best form of meditation. It's the best form of renunciation. It's the best way to get peace. And it's the best punya. If you want to get nice Svarga Loka or anything, you can chant the Holy Name and get that also. And it's non-different from the Lord. And of course, spiritually, it yields the highest abode to Loka Vrindavan. And it yields prema. So many, many glorifications of name. However, we will also find that the same glorification is given to Karma Kanda and Gyan Kanda. If we look in Karma Kanda section, or we look in some Purana, then we'll find that the process of karma is glorified, and it will promise material results and also spiritual results. And if you look at Gyan, again, it will be glorified and give all sorts of wonderful results you can get from these processes. So then we'll become a little confused. And then we may think, oh yes, bhakti, karma, jnana, all equal. All the same thing. But we also know this is not true, because we know karma is limited to the material world and jnana is limited to liberation. So the goal of these different processes is actually different. However, if we have no proper knowledge or faith, then we will equate bhakti with other processes. Or we will think that bhakti actually, these glorifications of bhakti are actually exaggeration. Because in Karma Kanda, all the glorifications are there, but many are exaggerations. And different devatas would be glorified as absolute or Bhagavan. It's not so, but it will be glorified like that, to give faith in the people. So in Karma Kanda, definitely there is exaggeration. But with bhakti, there is no exaggeration. And when there's a glorification of the Holy Name, promising all sorts of the best punya, and going to Goloka, or getting material results, getting liberation, these things are not exaggeration. They're exaggeration if they're applied to Karma Kanda or Jnana Kanda. They are exaggeration, because they don't give everything. But bhakti gives everything. As a supreme process, it can yield whatever a lower process is giving. That is what karma can give, or what jnana can give. So the result of karma, of course, is material results. If you chant Hare Krishna, you can get material results. And if you chant Hare Krishna, you can also get liberation. So therefore, it is said that for the devotee of the Lord, bhakti and mukti are standing with folded hands, waiting and asking to do some service for the devotee. That means that all the results of karma and jnana are available for the devotee of the Lord. That is bhakti, liberation, and material enjoyments. They're also available for the devotee. But generally the devotee doesn't want them. But beyond that, bhakti gives something else. It can give mukti, it can give bhakti, material enjoyment, but it also gives prema, which again cannot give, nor can kama give. So the glorifications of bhakti are absolutely true. Whatever glorification there is correct, because it gives everything.
And for jnana kama, it's all glorifications?
No, not correct, because they don't give everything. So in the case of karma and jnana, exaggeration is there. But in the glorification of bhakti, no exaggeration. So we cannot minimize the glories of the holy name. If there's so many glorifications are given for chanting the holy name, we accept them. We cannot say, no, this is not true. This is too much glorifications. Not. It's only there to, give a good name to bhakti, but actually we don't get these results. And that is artava, that's offense. So therefore the Lord is directly the holy name. But because of that, he can give everything. Whereas he's not directly involved in karma or jnana. He definitely gives mercy there, but not to the same extent he gives in the process of bhakti and chanting the holy name. So he's not fully present in these processes. So therefore, we should never minimize the powers or the glories of the holy name. And if we do so, that becomes offensive. Another way we can minimize is to use material logic to give some meaning to the holy name, or try to understand what the holy name means. So applying material logic to the Lord or his name is not very fruitful for us. The Lord is superior to any of our logic, and his name also is superior to logic. So therefore, we cannot try to use material logic to explain Krishna's name. So that's another offense if we use material logic. So this offense arises due to misunderstanding of Krishna, a misunderstanding of the non-difference of Krishna and his name. Krishna and his energies, Krishna and his name and his qualities and his form. We consider them all different from Krishna, and we'll have this offense. So, jnanis or karmis will both commit this offense. The karmis will think, no, this is exaggeration. How can chanting Krishna's name give you liberation and give you all material results? You have to do worship devatas to do this thing. So they'll still say the glories of chanting Krishna's name are not true. And the jnanis say, how can the holy name give you liberation? We are laboring so hard, doing so many vratas and controlling our senses, and takes us many, many lifetimes to get liberation. How can bhakti and chanting the holy name give it like that so easily? Namabhata itself can give liberation. How is it possible? But this is stated in scriptures. So they say that therefore the glorification of the holy name is all exaggeration. So those who are attached to the material world, those attached to liberation, they will commit this fault, and they will minimize the glories of the holy name. So if one commits this offense, then he should ask forgiveness from the Vaishnavas for this. If we associate with people who have minimized the glories of the holy name or commit this offense, this is dangerous for us. We can also begin to think of the holy name as simply another punya or some material means of getting some material ends. So we have to be very, very careful not to associate with people who are committing this offense. Another related offense, that's what we call the eighth offense, that is to consider chanting to be like karma kanda. In other words, we will make the holy name, chanting the holy name, into a material process. And again, this arises from the fact that we are more attached to things in this material world and we really don't believe in a transcendental world or a supreme personality of Godhead. So therefore, we'll bring process of chanting the holy name down from a transcendental level to a material level, and make it the same as material karmas. So, karmas are activities we do prescribed in the shastra with some sense control, minimizing our sinful activities, involving sacrifice, charity, yoga, varnashram, worship of devatas and pitras, gyan, etc. In order to get a pleasant future body. So guarantee that our future existences will be pleasant. We do all these things, sacrifice, charity, varnashram, worship of devatas, etc. That is karma, a karma kanda. So this is definitely a material goal. We're not aspiring to get out of the world, we're aspiring for a nice material existence. This, of course, is permitted by the Supreme Lord. The process of karma is part of the Vedas. So it's permitted for some people who are not qualified by faith in Vishnu or Krishna. They must take to it such a process. If they are attached to material things, let them follow this process of karma. But though it is permitted by Krishna and recommended for some people, that does not make it the ultimate process. It is an indirect process leading to the Supreme Lord. So it's not really spiritual. It is beneficial in that we learn to get our senses controlled. It's not beneficial because it keeps us in the material world and gives us more attachments. Nevertheless, the Lord does ensure that people will minimize their sinful activities and gradually rise up to a sattva-gun platform. When they get to sattva-gun, then they'll become detached. Sattva-gun means we are not attached to the material things as much. So by doing karmas, we gradually rise up to sattva-gun. So when we're in sattva-gun, we know that this is favorable for devotional service. It doesn't cause bhakti, but it is favorable. Doing these punyas and karma kanda can never yield bhakti. It can only yield more as a nice material existence, that's all. So karma cannot yield bhakti in any way. What yields bhakti? Bhakti only. Something spiritual has to come from something spiritual, not material. Material things cannot produce spiritual results. So bhakti comes from bhakti. Bhakti comes from the mercy of the Lord and the mercy of the devotee, which is bhakti. And does not come from karmas. And no matter how many karmas we do, it cannot guarantee us spiritual results. Nevertheless, karma is good because one learns to control the senses, one learns to worship a superior, an authority, a deva or whatever, higher being. And gradually we can come to sattva-gun and become detached from material things. So this is a good, a favorable condition for bhakti. So it's not a absolute necessity, but it's favorable. So we have to understand the position of karma, that it is, has limited results and is indirect. It is not a final process. After one comes to this stage, we can do two things, or even three things. We can do yoga, we can do bhakti, but we can do jnana. Once we're in the subject mode. Once we're detached, then we may go for liberation, mukti. And we practice jnana. Or we may do yoga, and then realize paramatma, or we may do bhakti. So karma is definitely an indirect process. And after that, then we have to do other things. Whether it is jnana or bhakti, or whatever. So we should never equate chanting the holy name with such a material process. Because that material karma can never get you out of the material world. And to bring down bhakti to that level, and the holy name to that level, for simply minimizing Krishna, minimizing the process of bhakti, making it a material thing. So actually the holy name is quite unique. It is a means, chanting the holy name is a means to get prema and to attain Krishna. But it is also Krishna. So it is also the end. It's a means to an end, it's also the end. Karma is a means, it's not an end. After you do karma, you get a goal, then you give up karma and do something else. You go to jnana, go to bhakti. If you perfect bhakti and get mukti, then after that, then you have to give up that and go to bhakti anymore. Other processes are indirect. They are means to an end, and then you do something else. Bhakti, you do bhakti, and you chant the holy name. When you achieve the end, you don't give it up. You still chant. We do bhakti now, and then when we get prema, we still do bhakti. We chant the holy name now. When we get prema, we still chant the holy name. We don't give it up. So the same process is the sadhana, and it's also the goal, prema. So we have sadhana bhakti, we have prema bhakti. It's both bhakti, both same activities. It's not so in these other processes. Once you perfect that, then you have to go to something else. Give up those activities, go higher. So there's a big difference between bhakti and any other process. The name is the means, and the name is also the end. It is. Name is used in sadhana bhakti, and name is used in Krishna prema also. Only difference is in sadhana bhakti, we chant, but we are impure. And when we're on the level of prema, we chant, but we are pure. So therefore, in sadhana bhakti, the name is covered and the full effect isn't there. That's namabhas. And when we're in the pure state, then it is pseudonam. The name is 100% powerful. And prema. So the same name is used, but we can say the effect is different, that the name is a little different because of the impurities of the devotee. But by the process of sadhana, gradually, and association, then we can become pure, and the name can become fully powerful. And when it becomes fully powerful, we don't give it up. We continue to chant it. So name, we continue to chant the holy name, even in the level of prema. So if we have such a desire, it is usually, it must be due to material attachments, gross material attachments, if we're going to equate bhakti with the material process, and due to ignorance. So we have to get proper knowledge and get proper association, get the mercy of the devotee. Bhakti Mohan Thakur says you should take the foot water and the maha prasadam and the foot dust from the devotee to purify yourself and get rid of the offense. You act like this. These, the Lord Chaitanya says, these two things are purifying for us. The foot dust from the devotee, the foot water from the devotee, and the prasadam, and the remnants from the devotee. These are powerful to purify a person. So he says, you take these things, get rid of this offense. Okay, any question there? Logic can be used, but it should be used following the acharyas. We should not deviate and invent our own speculations, no? So it has to have some precedent in the way we use our logic. Now the Uttamadhikari in Vaidhi-bhakti, the definition of the Uttamadhikari there is that he has deep knowledge of Shastra and he is very skillful at logic. But that logic is not the material, you know, logic where we simply speculate and argue to defeat another person. It is following the acharyas, and using our reasonable, you know, our intelligence to put Shastra together in the proper way. Not to interpret it and speculate and give our own meanings.
But I wouldn't be by using examples of your like comparative examples to the things
that's a good use. if it supports our conclusions, it's good. Where we use logic to go away from the conclusions and speculate and make a new conclusion, that is where it's dangerous. So if we say, the holy name, and we say, okay, Krishna is, they could say Krishna means black, as some people say. You'll see this in the scholarly works. Krishna means black. Krishna means darkness. Krishna means ignorance. So in this way, they'll offend Krishna, holy name. And then how we can get any, light or enlightenment by chanting Krishna's name, that means darkness. Now they can speculate like this. So the Hari means Hari. Hari means to steal away. So steal away your intelligence, we can say. Like this, we can think of all sorts of unauthorized meanings, which may be literally true according to scholarship or, Sanskrit. Seems we can do that, but not necessarily true. There is one, Swayambhu in Risda. He was taking a university course. And then Gudakesh, they have the translation for that is some very strange translation about hair. One with curly hair or something. And Gudakesh also, they give a different meaning to that. Also hair, I think. Gudakesh is something about hair also. Yeah, Kesha. So they can speculate anything to different meanings.
So that type of
logic is to use your own intelligence separate from the conclusions of the acharyas. And if we enlarge upon that using our intelligence, fine. That's what our intelligence is for. That's for the number 8. To think of the holy name as karma from the simply a material process.
You should declare the holy name scholar as a material thing. And sometimes in the beginning, when someone comes to universal service and the person is in distress, and they might have some immediate desires, but we still encourage them to chant Hare Krishna.
You get rid of their distresses.
Yeah.
Huh? There's no problem because it does that. But we should not limit it to that and say this is all the holy name can do. In other words, it's just like another punya and our prize did up, and that's all it is. We should not stick it down to that level. It can do that, definitely, but it does much more than that also. So we should not think it is limited to like karma kanda, like a prize did in karma.
In the beginning, there's nothing wrong to encourage them like
that. In the beginning, people come because they have suffering or whatever. So they'll release the suffering. But we shouldn't limit it to that, not finally. We shouldn't tell them it gives more than okay, do another one. So, next is, that's two offenses there, so we have 6, this is number 7. Committing sin on the strength of the holy name. Shastra says that chanting the holy name will wipe out your reactions to your sinful activities. All the karmic reactions for sin will be annihilated. And also the sinful acts, we will stop sinful acts, and the desire to commit sinful acts will also be wiped out. So no longer commit sinful activities, nor will we get the reaction from previously committed sinful activities, nor will our present activities accrue any karmas in the future. This is the power of the holy name. Suffering or klesha has a broad meaning in Shastra. We usually associate the klesha with the suffering of the body we have now, which is the result of previous sinful activities. And so sometimes papa means the effect, the klesha we get now, rather than the original act. It means the effect of that sin, and now there's a little ambiguity there. And klesha can refer to the present suffering, but klesha also has a broad meaning and it refers not only to this final thing, it also refers to the papa, or the act that makes it happen, and it also refers to the desire that causes the action, the sinful action, and it also refers to the ignorance of the jiva, which is the cause of all these material desires. So klesha has a very broad meaning, from ignorance to desire to action to reaction. All these are considered within the word klesha, or suffering. So the holy name eradicates all suffering. So it eradicates the reaction, the act, the desire, and the ignorance. That is our misconception about who we are in the material world, which drives us into material activities. So the holy name can eradicate all these things. So of course the seed of all of the suffering is this ignorance. And ignorance of what? Ignorance of Krishna. We don't admit Krishna. We simply want to enjoy separately. And so therefore we develop desires in the material world, and we act, and we get a reaction of klesha, of suffering. So the holy name wipes out all these things. The reaction, the act, the desire, and the very origin of that, the ignorance. These are all wiped out by the process of bhakti and by chanting the holy name. However, when we first start, we first have shraddha, and gradually we advance and we come and go to a higher and higher level of purity. So that takes place over some time, it's not immediate. So therefore, the eradication, annihilation of these sins and sinful reactions and desires and ignorance will also take time, gradual process. So, at any point between the beginning of bhakti and pure bhakti, or Krishna praying, there will be some trace of papa. Some trace will be there. There may be little trace if you're in bhava, and maybe bigger if you're in sadhana bhakti. And the closer you are to the beginning state, the more it will be there. So there will be some remnants there, because it takes time to eradicate all these effects. By the performance of bhakti, of course, and gradually these traces of sin will disappear. However, in the meantime, the devotee should not commit new sins. So Krishna promises in Bhagavad Gita, you surrender to me, aham tam sarva papayo moksha asami, I'll free you from all sins, reactions to sins and sins. So Krishna makes his promise that he'll take away all the effects of sin. But if we're not on the highest level, then there still is a tendency, because that trace is there, there still is a tendency to commit sinful activity. It'll be there to some degree. So if the devotee does commit a sinful activity, then Krishna still promises, I forgive you for that sinful act, and you're still my devotee. If it is a temporary act of sin, and then you correct yourself, then Krishna forgives. However, if the devotee commits the sin thinking that I can get no reaction because I'm a devotee, then this becomes the aparad, the seventh aparad. If we take advantage of Krishna's promise and then commit sinful acts, thinking I am absolved of my sinful reaction because Krishna promises, then this becomes aparad. It is even the effect of that is greater than the sin itself, the effect of the sin. So that's very dangerous. If it is an act, what we call accidental sin, then no problem. But if it is premeditated, so to speak, taking advantage of the power of the holy name, then considered aparad. And it's said in the Shastra, even to think that, think of such a thing, that is also very, very serious. such a sinful act, taking advantage of the holy name will be very, very detrimental to a person, cause a lot of suffering. Now, of course, a very gross example is the person who hears about the glorification of the holy name and how it can remove the effects of 10 million lifetimes of sin. So then that person with no faith in the Lord says, this is a good chance to enjoy a lot. So he dresses up like a Vaishnava, puts tilak on, starts chanting, and meanwhile, when no one's looking, he does more sinful activities, thinking I'm absolved because I'm a Vaishnava. So that's a rather extreme example. Probably doesn't happen so much here, but it does happen in India. People disguise themselves as Vaishnavas and then steal everybody's money and so many things like this. So it can happen. So we have to be very, very careful there. But there is a distinction here between what is called the accidental sin and this type of sin, committing sin in the strength of the holy name. So if it's accidental, Krishna will forgive that. But if we take advantage of the holy name and deliberately do sinful activities, then that is considered upper rung. And this is caused by bad association, some material association, chanting a namabhas with material association. So if one is chanting purely, of course, one will never commit such an offense. But if one is a namabhas, there's always some danger that this could occur. So to prevent that, we have to take good association and have proper knowledge of someone again. And this way we get protected from it. If we happen to commit it, then of course we have to take good association and prevent more sinful acts. Next offense is giving the name to the faithless people. Ashara Dana Vimukha. Vimukha means a materialist. A materialist with no faith. If the materialist or asura, demon, is exposed to the name, gradually he can develop faith. In other words, if we broadcast the holy name, people hear it enough, this is powerful enough to give them faith eventually. Constant exposure to the holy name, they can get faith. Once they get faith, then we can tell them to chant seriously. But if we take faithless people, people have no, who are basically materialists, and we make them chant, that's considered an offense. Because they have no faith, they don't like Krishna, and we force them to chant, then they commit offense. So we are the cause of their offense, so that's an offense for us. Sometimes the faithless person will try to take the holy name. That means they want to use the holy name and disguise themselves as Vaishnava, even though they're materialists. So this is also very dangerous if you start giving them the holy name and teaching them everything. It doesn't do any good. So we have to be very careful also. When we start telling people to chant, we make sure they do have faith. And they're not going to use it for some other purpose. So the Vaishnava should be careful, therefore, that when people are going to chant, that he instructs them, you have to give up your material enjoyment, your sinful activities, all these things we have to tell them. And when a person does give up the sinful activities, and we see he does have faith, then we can give him the name. So we may by accident, of course, start telling people to chant, giving up the holy name to them. But the other problem is that if we do know the person is not qualified for the faith, but we give it out anyway, because of material motives, then it becomes very offensive for us. In other words, if we give the holy name expecting that he's going to give me some donations or something like that, that is a real offense. We know he's not actually a devotee, he has no faith, but we give it to him because he'll give something to us. So that is offense. So if a Vaishnava sincerely gives a person, later he finds actually he doesn't have any faith, he's just a materialist and he's going to use it for bad purposes, then he should reject that disciple very quickly. Renounce him. So if the person who gives up the holy name doesn't do that, doesn't renounce that person, then it affects that person. In other words, the guru goes to hell as well as the disciple. If the disciple is unqualified and the guru does not reject him, both get pulled down. And of course, the disciple goes to hell automatically because of his aparad. If he has no faith, then he'll commit nama aparads and Vaishnava aparads, bhakti aparad. And this way he goes to hell. But if the guru doesn't reject him, then he also follows him, because they're linked together. Guru is responsible for the disciple. So instead of delivering the disciple goes to hell, then he drags the guru with him. So the guru should reject him before that happens.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody. Any guru. In other words, this is mentioned also in Hari Bhakti Vilas. This is that this is in relation to one should not take many disciples. That's the advice given. So, guru should not take many disciples. And then it makes a statement quoting from some Purana. And then the statement there is that just like the wife is under the shelter of the husband, and the ministers are under the shelter of the king. And therefore they share the results. In other words, if the wife or the minister does something, then ultimately the husband or the king is responsible. So in the same way, for the disciple and the purohit, or the guru, there's a link of responsibility there. So the disciple does sinful activity, in spite of the fact that he's vowed not to, and he continues to do so, then the guru is responsible. So he gets the effect also. So they said, therefore, one should not take many disciples, because then, if you've got too many disciples, you can't see what they're doing. And then you can get the effect on yourself and suffer for that. We shouldn't force people. Our programs are voluntary, of course, anyway. And we're inviting them to come so that we're assuming they have some sort of interest. And we invite them to chant. We don't force them to chant. Sometimes the giving of the holy name is like a nam guru. It's called nam guru, one who gives the holy name, which is like our first initiation, in one sense, where we formally give them the holy name and give them instructions on the holy name to chant seriously and make them vow to give up sinful activities. But sometimes this refers to that you want to actually give up the holy name in this way. That's like formally rather than informally. So therefore, what do we do? How do we preach? Therefore, through Sankirtan, by chanting, everyone can hear the holy name. There's no offense in doing that, going around chanting. That's what Lord Chaitanya did. For 1 year after he came back from Gaya, he was absorbed in chanting the holy name with his followers in Shiva Sangha, but they would close the doors and no one could get in who was unqualified. All the Shaktas and Smartas and other people, they couldn't get in. He wouldn't allow those faithless people to get in. So they simply had nice kirtans inside there, and every night they would have ecstasy. Then after 1 year, Lord Chaitanya said, I no longer get happiness, no ruchi, no taste anymore. Something is wrong. And then he said, we have to spread the Sankirtan movement. We cannot confine it like this. And then you order Haridas and Nityananda, all the devotees. You go out and you go in the streets and you beg people to chant the holy name and you hold kirtan and do all this stuff. In other words, you preach. So therefore, they did kirtan after that outside publicly. So everyone can hear that that's allowed. And by constant hearing, even the demon can develop faith. And when one has faith, then they will seek out instruction on their own. And they will ask for good instruction. And they'll be inquisitive. They'll want knowledge. And at that point, then one can give instructions and give the holy name. And by chanting, that person can get to a pure level. So in this way we deliver the world. We can expose them to the holy name, but we don't prematurely do them things which will cause offense on their part.
With the example given for Jagga and Mother, how we have to go door to door, and he met with all different kinds of people, some people criticized him, some people had done very good, and sometimes she would probably come across her expressed it in that kind of mood.
Without discrimination, you give up the holy name.
So how does one do with that? What would we do on the balancing agent between this
Well, so then the idea is that we expose them to the holy name first, and we can request a chant, but we're not going to go into details about instructions for the glory of the holy name, etc. Like that. If they don't want to chant, fine, we're going to leave them, we're not going to force them at that point. So it has to be a little free will involved there. Haridas and Nityananda, they would go out, and when they would approach Jagat Mata, then they were a little doubtful. Lord Chaitanya wants us to go and preach to everybody. I wonder if it means these two also, because they're so fallen, they're hopeless. But instead, it's Lord Chaitanya's instruction to go to everybody and preach to the most fallen. So they're the most fallen. I think we're going to have to ask them to chant also. So they did so, but then they got a very bad reaction because Jagat Mata began chasing them down the street and throwing things at them as a result. But when Lord Chaitanya, when he came, then Nityananda, of course, said, well, you have to be a little merciful to them and don't kill them or anything like that. They did develop faith first. Because of the tolerance that Nityananda showed, then Jagat Madai, their heart changed a little bit and they became a little respectful. And by that, giving that respect, and they were allowed to get some mercy, and then the faith developed. And when the faith developed, then they could get the holy name at that point. And of course, by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, they became very, very great devotees after that point. But it took some, on their part, it took some change of heart. And when that heart changed, then they got mercy and the faith developed.
I think
that there are a lot of people who take exposure to Krishna consciousness with a concrete amount of their authority, principles
that
they will be
inclined to chant the kitchen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Along with encouraging, we should encourage them to give up the sinful habits if they have sinful habits. Mm-hmm. And then there's no on our part, there's no offense or anything like that if we do so. Yeah? So then another aparad is pramad. In the Sanskrit, the whole verses go on and they merge them into several of the one line, and then the word pramad comes up there. So he takes pramad as a separate offense after merging together hainam kalpanam and artavad as one. Then he brings up pramad as a separate one. So pramad can mean madness, but it can also mean inattention. just like in the four defects of the human being, we have, you know, making mistakes and limited senses and cheating, and pramada is one of them. So pramada usually we say is illusion or madness or something like that, but actually it means inattention. Inattention. We overlook something. So this is, pramada comes up here, so it means inattention, or he analyzes it in different ways, he gets three different meanings there. So if we have inattention to the holy name, we cannot come to the stage of nishtha. We cannot attain steadiness without being very attentive. And without nishtha, we can't get to prema. We have a gradual process, you know, through anarshana vritti, and then nishtha, and then ruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. We need it if we chant constantly. If we're inattentive, still we don't get to nishtha. However, if we do chant with attention, and then the attraction for the holy name will automatically develop. We go to nishtha, and then ruchi, and asakti, and bhava, prema. So there's different types of inattention. One is called indifference, or lack of attraction. Anurag means attraction, and if you don't have that anurag, that is called indifference. We have a little faith, so we begin chanting, but no taste, no attraction. We chant only because someone says you have to chant. If you want to stay in the temple, have chant 16 rounds. I'll chant 16 rounds. I don't want to do it. Don't like to chant. But I'll do it because I have to stay in the temple. But that. No anurag, no attachment, no attraction, no taste for chanting. Indifference, that's indifference. That is due to strong material attachments. If we have strong material attachments, then that prevents us from having any attraction for chanting the holy name. So how do we remedy that? Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests that at least for a short period of time you concentrate on chanting very nicely and in association of devotees who do have attraction, and gradually one will develop a desire to chant, a taste for chanting. And also, of course, favorable items are living in a holy place or a temple, chanting next to Tulsi Devi in association of Vaishnavas. So if we do this, then if we make effort, then the attraction should develop. Attraction for chanting. If we make no effort, it won't develop. Or it'll be very, very, very slow at least. So we have to put effort into getting that attraction for chanting.
Someone chants but not yet in association with what is by himself. Mm-hmm. That means like you doesn't really have what kind of mood in that person in fact.
Well, he may develop an attraction for the holy name even without some association, or at least without constant association. He may develop it, but maybe the mercy of Krishna, whatever. But if you just want to avoid association at all times, it's not a very good symptom. Because association is good for our advancement. So if we don't have any, if we avoid association, we block off our advancement also. Another type of inattention is called jada, or inertia, or laziness. That means we have no eagerness, and very, very delayed chanting. Takes a long time to chant one round, and then we stop and do something else. With great reluctance, we start another round or something like that, and we take ages to do that. So we not very energetic in our approach to chanting. Prolong the process all day long. So that's called laziness. No eagerness to do things properly. Just take it easy all day long. So this is remedy for this is also association of Vaishnavas who are eager to chant, who don't waste their time. one of the symptoms of a person on bhava is he doesn't like to waste time. So therefore he will not waste his whole day trying to chant a few rounds. He'll do the rounds nicely and then do some other service or whatever he has to do. So by that association then he can develop enthusiasm also to give up this inertia. If the association causes a problem, then I suppose we better separate for a while. Maybe some unique cases. Third type of inattention is the restlessness of the mind. In other words, you can chant, and you can chant on time and chant properly. So, but when you're chanting, your mind is always somewhere else. And it's lack of concentration in chanting, or distraction of mind. Let's go, let me check off. So this is another type of inattention. So that, of course, is also caused by agitation of material things. We have attachments, and therefore when we're chanting, our mind is going to dwell on material things rather than on Krishna and the holy names. In other words, we have strong attachment to wealth, feminine success, position, whatever, these things. So therefore we have to give up those attractions. Bhaktivinoda Thakur suggests doing vratas like a kadasi, following very strictly, fasting. Undercodicy or appearance day of Krishna, things like this, following the vratas very nicely, having proper association, staying in the holy dhamma, and hearing properly. Then we can gradually bring the mind under control. Through this process of association and dhamma, etc., then gradually material tastes will become less and less, and spiritual tastes will become more and more. So we can bring the mind under control. Therefore, basically we have to develop an eagerness to chant, a taste and an eagerness. If we don't develop a taste and eagerness, then we never get to Nishtha, and if we don't get Nishtha, we can't go further. So therefore we should chant the prescribed number of rounds eagerly. And we have to be very, very attentive to control the mind and keep from wandering. And we should do this enthusiastically. And try to chant more and more also. So even if the other offenses are not there, if we're inattentive, still progress becomes very slow. So we have to be attentive. Like that. Of course, even the last offense, that is attachment, lack of faith and attachment, that's also a cause of all other offenses, ultimately. Yeah. But even if you don't have the other offenses, if this offense is dead, then you still cannot advance properly this inattention.
So sometimes
Anyway, by doing the vrata then chanting more, then you can gradually develop the taste. If we don't finish?
No,
Well, when you're chanting, you're always in anxiety. So therefore you can't concentrate. You're worried you won't have to finish. Well, I suppose the best thing to do is actually set sufficient time aside every day, specifically to chant, And just make sure that you don't minimize that. Always have that time available. And don't do other things at that time. You know how long it takes to chant around? Then you put that time aside. And then don't do anything at that time. No phone calls, no going out, no nothing, that's all. Just make a rule like that. Then there won't be any anxiety anymore. Because you'll definitely be able to finish in that time. And don't delay and do other parts of the day. Otherwise, you forget. In the middle of the day, you forget. So better just get out of the way in the morning time. In a certain period of time. Well, it's always good to chant, but generally we have to chant on our beads that are prescribed number of rounds. We can't make an excuse like that. There may be emergencies, of course, like that, but we shouldn't make it a regular thing to do that. It shouldn't be a regular habit that we just chant without our beads and make out and say, I've made up my rounds this way. That can be emergency only, but not as a regular thing.
Is there any specific time when you chant, like late night or something, then you go to bed?
You can chant any time. There's no restrictions in the holy name. But if you do it late at night, generally you can't concentrate too much. So that's why it's generally better to do it early in the morning. This is a normal way we do it. Chant before your day starts, your activities start. Otherwise, you cannot concentrate so much after. And you get tired at the end of the day also. And of course, if there's no alternative, then you have to do it. But it's not the best thing to do. But it's still better than not chanting your mouth.
Is it healthy to desire to chant an uninterrupted round, uninterrupted round? I mean, when you chant one japa,
better not than you just stop in the middle. There is a vidhi like that, a rule like that in Hari Bhakti Lalans that says you don't stop the round in the middle and then later on continue. You should at least chant 108 and at least finish a round and not stop in the middle. There's a vidhi like that.
It is good. I heard that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he didn't like to break his arm.
Never heard.
When you are chanting from due to having quick breathing, how can we just take it like that and turn around?
Well, better than nothing, of course, but it's better if we could condense a little more than we have time for other things also. If it's physically impossible, then of course, what can we do?
Well, it's hard to know sometimes because different people chant at different speeds, and some people get 2 mantras per breath, and some people only get 1 mantra per breath.
Uh-huh.
Sometimes I think it's a matter of increasing
Maybe you should get 10 mantras per breath and then it'll be good. 10. It's possible you can use a 15th if you're real skillful, I think. Probably. Yeah, you can do 15 maybe. That little, take a big breath, probably should do that. At least 10 is probably you can do. Right? 8 at least. Well, you should at least maybe you should do some pranayama or something. That'll help. Prabhupada said, I think 5 minutes around. I think once, somewhere, or maybe 6. Something like that. 5, 6, like that. Prabhupada says, take too long, then generally the mind cannot concentrate. So for such long periods of time, and then we'll just kind of. It's a lot, The longer it gets, usually, it's harder to concentrate for such a long period of time. Intensely. Okay, to do it. Okay, last offense. Attachment to me and mine. The tenth offense is there because attachment is the opposite of surrender. If you have strong attachment, that means you have very little surrender. If you have very little surrender, then it is difficult to practice bhakti. Now in the scripture, of course, there are six symptoms of surrender, or sharanagati. That is, accepting what is favorable, rejecting what is unfavorable, taking Krishna as one's only protector, depending on Krishna alone, humility, or thinking oneself very fallen, and putting oneself completely under Krishna's will and surrendering oneself, body, mind, and words, everything to Krishna, and simply following him completely. These are considered to be the marks of surrender. These don't manifest fully until one advances quite a lot. So in the beginning stage, maybe partially manifested. But if they're completely absent, then it means we have no surrender at all. And the opposite of non-surrender is completely, we have a complete attachment to material enjoyment. So to begin devotional service, you cannot have such a attitude to complete material enjoyment. We have to have faith, and faith means we have to have some sort of surrender to begin. So, if we have these attachments, therefore, and we hold on to the attachments, and we have no desire to give them up, then it is difficult to practice bhakti, even though bhakti gives us detachment. If we consciously hold on to our material attachments, it's very, very difficult. It is like the example is given of the boatman and the marriage party. So the marriage party gets on the boat at night, and they're going to go to the wedding party up the river, and so they hire the boatman and say, "You take us to the party up the river." You pull the boat up the river, and we'll wake up in the morning, be in time for the wedding the next day. So they pay the man the money, the captain, and they say, "Okay." They have a nice party that night, and they all go to sleep. And then they wake up in the morning, and they expect to get off the boat and be at the village. But when the sun rises in the morning, they wake up, and they look around, they're in the same place. And so they go to the captain and say, "You cheated us, you slept all night." And the boatman said, "No, I didn't do that. We've been working very hard all night. And we're not going to give your money back either." And they say, "No, look, we're in the same place." And the captain says, "No, we worked all night. We're working like anything, pulling the boat up the river." And then one of the parties looks in the thing on the boat, and they see the anchor is still in the bottom. They forgot to pull the anchor off. And all night they were rowing, they were pulling the boat, but nothing, they don't move because the anchor's in. So if we hold on to the material things like this, and we have no desire to give them up, no matter how much bhakti we do, nothing happens. We stay in the same place. So in spite of hearing the glory of the holy name and the idea to give up our attachments, if we don't want to give up our attachments, it's very difficult for bhakti to work. That is why faith is necessary. Faith means we are taking Krishna as our protector, and we want to surrender to him. We're putting ourselves under his will, and we're giving less significance to the material world and all these things. If no faith is there, that means 100% material attachment, and you cannot advance. So even though we have some faith, if we have bad association, then that material attachment can spring up again quite nicely for us. And then the process won't work because of that, those attachments, great attachments. We always have to be careful, therefore, to minimize the material attachments that we have. And cultivate surrender.
It's in mind, like, the mind obsessing about things, is that like a material attachment?
Mind is?
The mind obsessing about things, you know.
Material things?
Yeah.
That's material
things. Obstacles that are in your path. Might be obsessing about obstacles, or obstacles you might have, so.
Better to concentrate on Krishna. rather than obsessed with our obstacles. We should be obsessed with Krishna. So if we have this material attachment, what do? We have to associate with people who are free from attachment. That's the best remedy. Good examples are the best inspiration for us. So one who is free from attachment, not only free from attachment, but completely dedicated to Krishna and chanting the holy name. And then we get inspired to follow that example. And by cultivating surrender, then we can progress very nicely. So even if we don't, we avoid all the other offenses, if we do have this attachment, there's still no advancement takes place. And of course, material attachment ultimately is the cause of all the other operands. Because of material attachment, then we commit operands. So not only should we, there's 10 offenses, so not only we should avoid the 10 offenses, but we should actually, those are the negative aspects, don't do this, don't do this, don't do this. But then we have the positive things also. So we don't commit Vaishnava operands and criticize the sadhus. So what's the opposite of that? Praise the sadhus. Give credit to the sadhus. And glorify the sadhus. Associate nicely with the sadhus. Serve the devotees. And instead of disobeying the guru, we obey the guru. Give respect to the guru. And instead of thinking of Vishnu as a devata, we worship Vishnu properly with proper respect and things like that. And instead of minimizing the value of Shastra, we give proper respect, and we do that by reading carefully and understanding and following its instructions. And instead of minimizing the glories of the holy name, we should maximize the glories of the holy name. Should have great faith that the holy name is complete and has most power, most powerful thing. And instead of, obviously, we don't commit sinful activities, we should avoid sinful activities. And a positive thing, of course, is to act according to Dharma and follow the rules and regulations properly and chanting. And we can preach, we should not be restricted from preaching, but we should also encourage people and make them into faithful people. And then we can give out the holy name for them. And instead of thinking of going for material results from the holy name, we should aim for prema, not equated with karma khanda. And we should chant attentively and we should surrender to Krishna. Okay, that covers all the offenses. And that way we can chant the holy name constantly. So we should, and Lord Chaitanya says one should keep that instruction around one's neck. So we should always be willing to accept all sorts of obstacles and insults and whatever. And we should not be disturbed by that.
In hearing that material attachment slows down the process. I was really interested in that, and hearing that it makes great sense of discouragement. Is one, you know, we have material attachment.
Yeah.
So then one becomes discouraged.
Oh, because we're going to go so slow because of our material attachments. Well, it's obvious that everybody's going to have material attachments, and that will continue all the way up to the prema. Well, there's going to be some little smidgen in there or something, yeah? And that part is dangerous in the material world. But as we go on, obviously it decreases and decreases. Now the main problem is, if you don't have an intention, if you've been giving up our material position in this material world, if we don't want to go to Krishna, then how can Krishna pull you there? So that's the main intention here. That we don't want to give up our material position in this world. We don't want to give up this material desire and material enjoyment. Mm-hmm. And we actually want to try to do both things at once. It's impossible. That's the main problem here. So that's why real faith, genuine faith is necessary. When we have faith, then we're willing to give up. We may have the attachments, but we're willing to give them up, and we're trying to give them up. So that is not the problem. The main is we don't even have that desire to give up those attachments.
There may be a difference between somebody who's chanting inattentively and feels that it's all right to chant inattentively, and somebody who's struggling against the obstacles that have already been created by their past. You are completely in the attachment and the standards of the mind and struggling against them, but you're still obviously going to result in inattention.
They're endeavoring at least. That's inertia. Lazy. Not making an effort actually, even to do anything in devotional service. Yeah. So the other person making effort, definitely Krishna will give mercy also. Bhaktivinoda spends another chapter. These are the namaparads. Remember, there's actually four types of aparads. Nama aparad, Vaishnava aparad, Seva aparad, Siva aparad. So he enumerates some Seva aparads in one chapter, which is basically we find in Nectar of Devotion. He doesn't elaborate on them. That means offenses to the deity, basically, to Krishna, such as, you know, arguing in front of the deities, or praising oneself in front of the deities, coming in front of the deities in a dirty condition, or with one's shoes on, or going into the deity room in a vehicle or a palanquin, these type of things. Generally, the devotees don't commit themselves. Maybe unintentional at most. But he spends one chapter on that also. And of course, the Vaishnava aparad is included in the Nama aparad also. First aparad is also Vaishnava aparad. Jiva Parati doesn't deal with Nitya.
Yeah.
No. So? Okay.
Even if you commit some Seva Parati, and then we're still, by chanting Holy Name, we can still
Verify that. Yeah, Krishna Chakravarti doesn't consider Seva Parati such a serious thing for the serious Vaishnava. Usually it's committed accidentally only. And devotional service, or continued devotional service, will take care of the type of operas, omissions. It's not done usually consciously. It's usually done out of because we're so busy or whatever inadvertently happens. Those type of operas. So he doesn't think that they're so serious after all. But they do occur, of course, we have to correct them. That's
So the same difference in attention, you mentioned that the three of them, three categories, the three are more.
The restlessness and the laziness, indifference, lack of taste. Okay. Hare Krishna.